Now, meditation, as the second great stage of the spiritual path, consists of what we've called concentration and what we've called meditation proper, just these two. It doesn't include contemplation, which properly belongs to the third stage, the third great stage of the path, the stage, that is to say, of wisdom. It also corresponds to the first seven positive links. That is to say, corresponds to faith arising in dependence on suffering, delight arising in dependence on faith, rapture arising in dependence on delight, calm arising in dependence on rapture, bliss arising in dependence on calm, and concentration in the sense of concentration and meditation, in other words, senses 1 and 2 of the term as just defined, arising in dependence on bliss. Now, meditation, we can understand, is the middle or the intermediate stage of the spiritual path. Before it comes that of morality, after it comes that of wisdom. So, meditation comes in the middle. So, meditation is that stage of the spiritual path at which there operate both gravitational forces. The force of the conditioned and the force of the unconditioned. Meditation is that area, if you like, of our experience within which both of these forces operate. And this accounts, amongst others, for two things. First of all, it accounts for the ease with which we fall from stage 2 to stage 1. In other words, it accounts for the ease with which we fall sometimes from what seem the heights of meditation right down into the depths of worldliness. I think most people who practice meditation have had this experience at some time or other. You enjoy, perhaps, maybe in the class, maybe during the retreat, or it may be on your own at home, you enjoy what seems to be a really beautiful meditation. You might even begin to think that you really are getting somewhere. You might even begin to think that, well, you've really made it at last, spiritually, after all that striving, all the effort. You really got up there. You're amongst all these beautiful experiences, floating around you like so many pink and blue clouds. And you think, well, this is wonderful. This is going to stay with me all my life. This is going to stay with me forever. I'm just up here floating on these clouds, timelessly. And there's not going to be any further problem, any further worry, any further difficulty. At last I've got there. But what happens? What happens? Within a matter of minutes, not hours, not days, not weeks, but minutes, one is overwhelmed by what one can only describe as highly unskillful mental states. I leave it to you to fill in the blanks individually. Highly unskillful mental states. Not only that, but we find ourselves even acting in accordance with those highly unskillful mental states. Within a matter of minutes of floating up there blissfully on those beautiful clouds of our spiritual experiences in meditation. And in this way we oscillate, not from side to side, but between the heights and the depths, as it were. Sometimes we're right up there with the gods, as it were, thinking, well, I'd like to give my whole life to meditation. And the next minute, we're right down in the depths, really wallowing in it. And sometimes, therefore, we start thinking, well, is meditation worthwhile? I mean, with all this effort, with all this trouble, all this exertion, spreading these wings so painfully, up there we get, we soar there for a while, and then flip, flop, our wings seem to give way somehow, crash, we find ourselves back on the earth, maybe a few feathers damaged. This is what happens. So we start thinking, well, is it worth it? I get up there only to fall down, I rise only to sink. So is it worth it? Maybe if I could get up there and stay there, it would be worth it, perhaps, but not to get up there and sink down is so disappointing. You begin to wonder whether such a thing as spiritual progress is possible at all, or whether you're not just deceiving yourself and you're doomed just to oscillate in this way between the heights and the depths forever. Now, all this trouble is due to the gravitational pull of the conditioned. And we get beyond, we become free from this gravitational pull of the conditioned only in stage three. Not in the stage of meditation, only in the stage of wisdom. Till then, so long as we're only in the stage of meditation, in the sense defined, we're liable to fall at any time from any height within that sphere or amongst those numerous levels of meditation, regardless of the length of time spent in meditation. You might have stayed up there for a couple of hours, even a whole week. Doesn't make any difference. You come tumbling down just as easily. And in India, there are lots of stories of this sort of thing, usually stories about Indian rishis. You're told that Rishi so-and-so, thousands of years ago, went off to the Himalayas, and he spent thousands of years meditating in caves, meditating in deep forests, meditating in hermitages, snowy peaks and the rest of it, completely oblivious, indifferent. There's all sorts of wonderful stories how one Rishi's beard grew miles and miles long and went flying over the whole countryside. Another Rishi had a great anthill built over him. He was so indifferent to what was going on around. Just went on meditating. This is beautiful. Went on meditating for ages upon ages, enjoying these highly blissful states of concentration and meditation and so on. But, of course, in the end he had to come out, or at least he decided to come out, perhaps, and end his meditation. And then what happened? It's the same story every time, according to these legends and traditions which you get in the Puranas. As soon as the Rishi comes out of his meditation, comes down from the mountainside, emerges from the forest, what happens? He encounters a nymph. He encounters a heavenly maiden. And within a matter of minutes, despite those thousands of years of meditation, he succumbs to her temptations. And he's back where he started from. And there are many such stories of all sorts of celebrated rishis, of course, in their earlier days. So what do these stories mean? They all mean one thing. They mean that meditation is not enough, so far as the spiritual life is concerned. It's not enough, but of course it's indispensable. It's the basis for the development of wisdom. Just as morality, in the sense of skillful action, is the basis for the development of meditation itself. I compared, you may remember, morality to the launching pad of the rocket. Now let's continue this comparison. Meditation, we may say, is like the first stage rocket, from which the second rocket, or the second stage rocket, is fired when the first stage rocket has reached a certain height. And this second stage rocket, of course, is wisdom. So meditation is indispensable, because it's only from meditation, the first stage rocket, that you can fire wisdom, the second stage rocket, not directly from the launching pad of morality itself. So meditation is indispensable, and this means it must be practiced. One must reach a certain level of meditation experience and sustain ourselves at that level if we can, for a certain length of time at least, consolidate it if we can, and then try to develop wisdom. Then try to release, if you like, our second stage rocket. And once we've done this, once we've released that second stage rocket, wisdom, then there's no longer any danger. We're no longer at the mercy of the gravitational pull.